if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 352. This is our 2025 PGA Championship in-depth research podcast. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss the PGA Championship from Quail Hollow, North Carolina. How are you, gents?
Afternoon, chaps. Yeah, very good, thanks. You?
Very good. How are you, Barry?
I'm great. The sun is shining here in Ireland, and it's projected to do that for the next 2 weeks. So, yeah, the mood is really good.
Monday the 12th of May, we'll see both our PGA predictor model and my tips preview being released. We are available on X. You can follow us. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. We're also on Blue Sky. Search for Steve Bamford and Paul Williams. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where this podcast is available every week. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. This is from Andy M. And Andy is in the UK. You create an enjoyable and informative podcast that ranks number one on my podcast cycle every week and got a few of my mates into listening to you religiously now too. Down on my bet so far this year and with some near misses, but I've sussed out a secret. Steve's bets avoidance stat. Now I'm hoping that will change my luck. Barry, I followed your lead and put my major selections on an accumulator that would pay off the mortgage if it comes through. Nice. 5 stars from me without question. Best podcast out there. Andy, we appreciate your time. Thank you for your 5-star review.
Love that. Cheers, Andy.
Yeah, thanks, Andy. And best of luck with your accumulator for the majors. I'm guessing you've probably got Rory sitting there already tucked in the bank and looking forward to the next three.
Yeah, just three more unique picks to get through. Yeah. It's not that hard, is it?
No. Easy done.
Just want to highlight for listeners, we are out of 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. So if you have spent the time over the next couple of days to actually write a review, you are very likely to be our 5-star review that I read out on next Tuesday's PGA Championship Tips podcast. So please spend some time. We need some reviews. That would be fantastic. Otherwise, it's going to be a bit that area of the show next week is going to be a little bit silent. Right, let's start talking PGA Championship, chaps. I know that we're under a bit of time pressure. I just want to start by highlighting the huge amount of free data that's available at Golf Betting System already for the PGA Championship. So there's going to be a few swings and a few misses in terms of the field, but the field that we've got at the moment, Paul has pulled together, we've got major championship form statistics. We've got PGA Championship form stats, very, very well put together as well. We've got Quail Hollow form stats. Interesting for someone like Scottie Scheffler that's never played the golf course. Mm. Plus, and this is very, very interesting, we've got Quail Hollow strokes gained rankings. Now, that's a great piece of analysis available at Golf Betting System where you can just look into the various skill sets. And you can look at all of the tournaments that have been played here since the course redesign before the 2015 PGA. And you can just see who is great at various aspects, including strokes gained total, at Quail Hollow. Can you believe it? This is all completely free of charge. There's no paywall. Golf Betting System. Yeah. How much would you pay for that kind of data elsewhere?
Yeah, there's plenty to get your teeth into. It's a nice week, isn't it? Because we've got Quail Hollows, the venue, we've got this wealth of data from the Wells Fargo going back to get our teeth into as well. So there's lots and lots of angles to attack it from this week. And yeah, as you say, reams of data to wade through as well. So a statistician's lover's dream this week.
You've been to the dentist, Paul? Yeah, have they injected you?
I need to get my teeth back in before I speak to it or talk the rest.
He's been taking pronunciation lessons from you, Steve.
Right. What a heart.
He's been looking at the Myrtle Beach leaderboard and seeing Potgieter near the top, like we all have, and we haven't got a penny on him. After he's been a friend of the podcast for the whole season.
I just watched Hao Tong Li three putter, a par three. That's knocked me off my stride.
Quail Hollow Club, Charlotte, North Carolina, as Paul attested to. We know a lot about this golf course. 2013 and 2016, Tom Fazio renovation. That renovation took place before the 2015 PGA Championship, which Justin Thomas won around here. One thing I will say about that tournament right up front, that was played in sweltering heat in August in North Carolina. That golf course was firm and very, very frisky. So just take that with a pinch of salt. I don't foresee this golf course playing as difficult and as firm as it did, simply because we're now playing it in May rather than at the very, very height of August temperatures in Charlotte, which must have been 30 plus. It must have been absolutely boiling playing this in 2015 in August. Right, the golf course itself. Classical, old style. It's a Carolina-type golf course. Plenty of dog legs. I classify it as long. The reason I classify it as long, it's a par 71. And we've got we've basically gone pretty much back to 2015. It's been extended out beyond where we normally see this on the PGA Tour. 7,626 yards, a par 71.
That is long.
That is long. That is a proper PGA Championship test. Holes with water hazards in play, 7. Number of sand bunkers, 61. Acres of fairway, 26. Fairway agronomy, 419 Bermuda grass. It's all overseeded with perennial rye. Rough, 419 Bermuda, overseeded with perennial rye. They're quoting on the greenkeeper's sheet that's been sent out for the PGA Tour. 2.75 inches, which is the rough length, which is 3/4 inch longer than it plays on the PGA Tour. My gut feel on that is that isn't overly long rough for a major.
No, they want scoring, right? Unless you get some serious wins.
As soon as I read that, I thought, I mean, I'm used to seeing
high teens straight away, like mid-high teens winning score straight away.
Well, that doesn't tend to be the MO of the PGA Championship. It tends to be nearer 10, 12, something like that. I know you're going to get outlying weeks and years where you've got soft courses, but it doesn't tend to be something they let run away. The course is no pushover anyway, isn't it? It's tough enough when it's set up for the Wells Fargo. So given that it's a little bit tougher from out of the rough, then, yeah, I can't see getting as deep as you've described there, Barry, but we'll see. I could be wrong.
I could be very wrong, so. And often am.
Depends if it rains, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we did see from memory, and I know it's the PGA Tour version of the course, which is about 150 yards shorter, but we did see Rory McIlroy winning here at 17 under last year. In a par 71 format. He won by 5 from Xander, and Ben Arnold was at 9 under.
Yeah.
Was only 8 shots better than the third place man, but
I think that's the point. I think that's the point, is that if you take the outlying performance of Rory, because didn't he double the last as well? So He was even further ahead, and then he obviously didn't need to do anything at the end there because he was so far ahead. But if you're saying the third place finisher was in single figures under par, then that pushes you into the territory of almost technical style or technical level scoring. Just with a player who, as we know with Rory, absolutely loves the course and can separate himself from the field when he's playing that kind of level of golf, which he was last year when he won.
We've seen Wyndham Clark win here at 19 under, McIlroy in 2021, 10 under, and Max Homa in 2019, 15 under.
Mm.
So I don't know. Difficult to say. It depends on the weather. I wouldn't be surprised to see mid-teens potentially, but I'm guessing at that. But it isn't an easy track. I agree with Paul. I mean, even last year, 2024, McIlroy destroyed it, and it still played overall as the sixth toughest golf course on the PGA Tour.
Mm.
It averaged at 71.73. It hasn't played under par across any of the PGA Tour renewals here since it's, I keep saying 2015 PGA as well. I do apologise. It was the 2017 PGA that Justin Thomas won. When he won here, it played at 2.5 strokes over par. But as I said, that was the most difficult golf course on the PGA Tour in 2017. But it was roasting hot in August and played super, super firm and super, super frisky around the greens and on the greens.
Mm.
I don't know.
It might not make for, because it allows players, like the best players of the week, to separate themselves from the pack, it might not make for the most exciting weekend, maybe. You might not have a whole bunch of people in and about the same score kind of trying to beat each other up. You could have one or two that have got away from the rest. So
it'd
be interesting to see how it develops. Because, the overall, it's a hard course, so it can really just destroy guys who aren't on their game and leave them floundering.
I think this is the kind of golf course where the elite, with a huge amount of power off the tee, can actually take themselves away from the rest of the pack.
Mm. Yeah. No, agree with that.
The greens are 6,500 square feet on average. They feature G12 Champion Bermuda grass overseeded with Poa Trivialis. Just a word of warning on that. That golf course and that agronomy is the perfect golf course for Scotty Scheffler. That's what he likes. Poa Trivialis overseed.
Mm.
Just throwing that one out there. What changes are we seeing for this? Well, the course, as I said, has been extended from its PGA Tour Wells Fargo Championship guys to something akin to the 2017 PGA Championship. From a yardage perspective, the 2015 Wells Fargo played at the 2024 Wells Fargo played at 7,558 yards. We are going to play 7,626 yards from the tips next week. That is 68 yards longer. How have they done that? They've added 10 yards to the first hole, the par 4. Just a mere 505 yard par 4 to start off. The ninth hole, par 4, they've added 25 yards to that. That's going to be a 530 yard par 4. It doesn't shout Russell Henley to me, I must say, on this. But, as regulars of the podcast will know, nothing ever shouts Russell Henley to me because he's on the post-it note of doom. 17th hole, par 3. That's been expended by 33 yards. Just a 223-yard par 3, the 17th. This is such a typical PGA Championship golf course. It's pretty, pretty frightening.
Mm.
I will put a link through to into my research preview in the podcast description. There's lots of content on there around about golf courses that have similar agronomy, especially on the greens. I'm not going to list them all, but Congaree, Country Club of Jackson, even Pinehurst Number 2, which is clearly played in North Carolina, which featured Champion Bermuda Grass Greens last year and was won by one Bryson DeChambeau. So lots and lots and lots of information out there. One thing I will say before we move on. Southern Hills, Oak Hill, Valhalla, Quail Hollow. Southern Hills, Oak Hill and Valhalla were shorter golf courses, but actually had smaller greens than Quail Hollow. So Quail Hollow at 6,500 is actually has quite chunky greens for a PGA Championship setup, but of course it's playing at 7-6, 2-6 as a par 71. So swings and roundabouts, really.
Yeah.
One thing I have noted here, chaps, and I've put this into the research article. If you look at the breakdown of how Justin Thomas won this, he basically had a B-plus tee to green game and he was absolutely fantastic on the actual greens. He only hit 50% of fairways. He was 62nd in the field for fairways hit. But when he won here in 2017, he averaged 328 off the tee. He was the longest driver in the field. Worthy of note. Now, that particular week, he was 56% of his total strokes gained here were from tee to green. 44% of his winning total was gained on the greens. Now, you could say to yourself, well, you know, that's one PGA Championship, Steve, and you've already said that that setup might not be exactly the same as this setup. Take that on board. But if I actually look at the strokes gained metrics for here across Homer, McIlroy, Clark and McIlroy, the last four renewals of the Wells Fargo they played here on the PGA Tour, 61% of the total strokes gained here for those four winners was tee to green. 39% was still with the putter. Mm. Now, that suggests to me that Team No Putt will not, or a member of Team No Putt, would not win at Quail Hollow. We're seeing, you know, 40% of the total strokes gained here from the putter over four, if not five, of the last renewals here, including the 2017 PGA.
Yeah.
It doesn't scream a Corey Connors type, if you see what I mean. And to just put that into some focus as well, we just had Augusta National. And as we know, with Augusta National, if you look at the strokes game breakdown there, 95% of the recent winners there has been from tee to green, only 5% on the greens. So this seems like a far more balanced challenge this week. Tee to green, and you've got to have a strokes gained putting strong performance to win this, I think.
Yeah. No, I get that. I think you have got to putt well, and you've got to scramble well as well. I watched back the highlights from Rory's final round last year over the weekend, and what struck me is how well he putted that particular day for a 5-under total to, as you say, to win by 5 in the end. And you know, his power is such that somewhere like Quail Hollow, it makes it play different for him. He can take different lines off the tee. It appeals to him so much. But for him to get that separation from Xander and from the rest of the field, it was his performance on the greens. So yeah, I get that. I think you might find some elite ball strikers can find themselves into and around the top 10, but to really, really differentiate yourself, yeah, you've got to putt well. So if Scott is gonna win, then he's gonna need to repeat that kind of performance that we saw from him last week at the CJ Cup on the greens, where he's sixth for strokes game putting, and you know, combined with his tee to green game, that kind of performance would be okay. But yeah, it's.
If you just look at the, I'm going McIlroy, Clark, McIlroy, Homer, Jason Day in this particular set of stats. Just looking at where the winners here at Quail Hollow ranked within the field for each individual skill aspect. Strokes gained off the tee 15th, strokes gained on approach 15th. You see what I'm saying about balance? Strokes gained around the green 26th. Tee to green 6th, which is quite low for the PGA Tour. Strokes gained putting 3rd. That's crazy. McIlroy 8th last year, 3rd for Wyndham Clark, 3rd for Rory McIlroy in 21, 1st for Max Homer in 2019, and 2nd for Jason Day in 2018. It screams bombers that can putt, Quail Hollow. It really does. Bombers who can go red hot with a putter. I'm not sure there's that many about.
No, it does narrow the field down quite considerably. Kind of more modern style golfer.
Not got a lot too much else to say about the course. At the end of the day, like as you said, Paul, there's lots and lots of video, lots and lots of history about Quail Hollow. It's, you know, it's not like we're going to Oakmont for the US Open where you're basically seeing the course once every 10 years. This is a regular stop on the PGA Tour. There's going to be loads of data out there. There's going to be lots and lots of stuff to read and to view around this. One thing I thought that was just far too good to turn down, and I will just quickly run through it. Strokes gained total here over the last, well, over the renewals here that we've seen. If you just look at strokes gained total and its rankings, amazingly enough, 28 rounds, Rory McIlroy is number one. Patrick Reed is number two. Dustin Johnson is number three. That's only from one round, one tournament, mind. Four is Jason Day. Five is Max Homer. Six is Joel Damon. Not sure he's in the field yet. Seven, Bryson DeChambeau. Eight, Ricky Fowler. Nine, Justin Thomas. Hideki Matsuyama, Sergio Garcia, Francesco Molinari. Those are some names just on the strokes gained analysis that Paul's pulled together.
Yeah. Some likely contenders there, I think. And certainly the kind of course where you get players who just enjoy the course, and you know, Rory's won there four times, but Max Homer, you just mentioned as well, he's won there twice over the years. Some players.
If we could see any kind of life from Max that was approaching kind of what he did at Augusta a few weeks ago.
But yeah,
if there's some kind of life from Max, he'd be a decent bettor at a good each way price.
But that was, you know, Barry mentioned this when we were talking off mic. It may have been before the last podcast. You know, this is only 3 or 4 weeks from Augusta, and players, you know, who peak for that won't have necessarily, you know, lost all semblance of form. And ultimately, Max Homer finished 12th there. Yeah, it was a bit out of the blue, but, you know, that's far better form than many of the players in this field can muster for this week. And he's got a stellar record here. So yeah, I can see people getting into Max next week. 125-1 I saw earlier today. So we'll see what he ends up being when the final bookmakers odds come out with their extended each way places on Monday next week.
2017 PGA Championship. Last time we saw a major here, last and only, JT won. Second was Patrick Reed. Fifth was Ricky Fowler with Hideki Matsuyama. Ninth was Jason Day. 13th was Brian Harman. Tied with Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson. Those are players that I can see who are likely to be in next week's PGA, who finished in the top 20. Is there anything about the course you want to talk about just from a agronomy or from a just what you remember of it perspective, Barry, and then we'll move onwards to some trends that I know the listeners love listening to this podcast for.
It's going to be a disappointing segment. I don't really have much to comment on it. It's a beefy golf course. There's very few holes that kind of sit hard in my memory. I'm sure they'll come flooding back when I'm watching it, but yeah. Let's just get on with it.
I think the greens do have a little bit of undulation in them.
They do. As you say, they're big as well.
I think they can be quite, you know, they're certainly not flat, put it that way. Some of the greens will be, but some of them have some. I can often remember Justin Thomas putting around here and, you know, breaking putts uphill, downhill, lots of. You get the grain with the Bermuda grass, the Champion, which is Poa Trivialis overseas, so that will smooth them. But I think some of these greens are pretty tricky. So, interesting.
Mm.
What trends have you got, Paul? I mean, all of my trends, as you probably know, I've got a few here, but it's all focusing on driving distance. So what can you bring to the party? Because we know that you are the trend meister when it comes to major championships.
Yeah, you don't get, you know, with the Masters, you've got this wealth of, you know, recurring data that comes up each year, and you can wade through it all. My starting point for the PGA Championship for the last few years, and this held water again last year, which is good to see, because at least it means I can continue to wheel this one out of the PGA Championship. But we have talked about it a few times in these pre-podcasts for the PGA Championship, and that's performance of a player at the last time they played the Masters. Now, if you go all the way back to Keegan Bradley's win, it's 2011, wasn't it? That was his major debut, so he hadn't played the Masters before that. So that's the cutoff point for this. Every winner since then, except for the COVID season, and remember the COVID season, the whole schedule was flipped upside down and all over the place, wasn't it? So I'm putting a line through that. Every winner since then, the USPGA winner had made the cut at least at Augusta on their last attempt. Now, the reason I say last attempt is there's one slightly tenuous point in there, but I'll go through it. So Rory in 2012, he'd finished 40th at the Masters. Duffner, 2013, 20th. Rory in 2014, 8th. Jason Day in 2015, 28th. Jimmy Walker, 29th. Justin Thomas, 22nd. Now, the contentious one is Brooks Koepka in 2018, because he didn't play the Masters in that particular year because he had that wrist injury, you may recall. He'd finished 11th the previous year. The following year, Koepka again, he finished 2nd at the Masters and went on to win this. Morikawa's year, as I said, I'm scrubbing it from the, expunging it from the records for the purpose of this. Mickelson finished 21st at the Masters, Justin Thomas 8th, Brooks Koepka 2nd, and last year, Xander Schauffele had finished 8th at the Masters. So it's getting even more pronounced since this PGA Championship became the second major in 2019. So Koepka 2nd, Mickelson 21st, Thomas 8th, Koepka 2nd, Xander 8th. So the last three all finished top 8 in the Masters preceding the PGA Championship. I think there's some logic in that, because players who've gone and performed well at Augusta felt that their game's in good enough nick to contend and potentially win a green jacket. And not quite get over the line, as those players that I just read through hadn't quite got over the line. And then to come to the PGA Championship with a bit of renewed optimism and belief in their game and go and get the job done. Now, if you get as brutal as cutting everyone who didn't make the cut out of the field for next week, you're going to take the field down to around about a third of its size. So somewhere in the 50 player bracket rather than the 156, which will finally be confirmed overnight on Friday into Saturday. I think the fact that it holds water, has held water for the last few years, is an interesting point, because it gives us a really good starting point. Some of the names that will miss off the list if you do get as brutal as that: Russell Henley. I'm sure that you'll be clearly glad to
see you, Russell. I was cutting him out anyway, because I can cut him out for another reason.
The drive by is on Russell.
Interesting to overlay my reason over yours, because I can take 2/3 of the field out just with one statistic as well.
Yeah. So Russell Henley's out. Sepp Straka, which I know Barry's always keen on. Bob McIntyre, I know you're always keen on Bob, Steve. Tony Finau, Adam Scott, Will Zalatoris, Mr. Cut, Nikolai Højgaard, Cam Smith, Brooks Koepka, Mr. Cut, didn't he? Sergio Garcia, Mr. Cut, he was popular at the Masters, didn't make an impression in the end. DJ, Phil Mickelson, lefty, Mr. Cut. So a number of strong players that you could build something of a case for potentially for this. If you get as brutal as chopping every player out who didn't make the cut at the Masters, and that's where you'll get to. If you go down to the point that I was making towards the end of those names I was reading through before, where top eight at the Masters has produced the last three winners, then the names or the list of players who finished top eight in this week's field are McIlroy, Rose, Reed, Scheffler, DeChambeau, Sungjae Im, Ludvig Åberg, Xander, Corey Connors and Jason Day. Last three all tied for eighth place. So there's 10 players there. And if that trend is to continue, and there's no reason why it should, but there's no reason why it can't, then potentially we've got the winner just in that little list of players there. And I've got to say, there's a few players within that list who I do think could go rather well next week. We shall see.
But yeah, let's overlay this one. I've got two things to discuss with you guys and the listeners. Firstly, the absolute 100% cast iron fact that long drivers win PGA championships.
Mm.
And number two, I just want to go into what US Masters winners have done after they've won their green jacket. So we'll do that towards the end. But this is going to be interesting over and above what you've said, Paul. Now, if I just go back in time, and I'm excluding from this one particular PGA Championship, which took place in 2020, Colin Morikawa won, and he won at Harding Park. Now, Harding Park in 2020 was a very non-PGA Championship because it was played on a 7,200-yard par 70.
Yep.
So not long, not onerous. He's not a long hitter. Okay. I'm taking all of the other venues into regard here, going back to 2011. So Atlanta Athletic, Kira Island, Valhalla, Whistling Straits, Balters Roll, Quail, 17, Belrive, Bethpage, Kira the second time, Southern Hills, which was a 7,556-yard par 70, Oak Hill, which was a 7,400-yard par 70, and Valhalla, which was a 7,609-yard par 71. These were the driving distance ranks of the winners of those tournaments going back across all of those. The highest I have got on the PGA Tour was 50th, and that was Phil Mickelson in 2021. I didn't have a rank for Brooks Koepka, of course, because he was on live by the time he'd won here in 2023. And if I just go off sheer distance, every winner of the PGA Championship since Keegan Bradley in 2011 across all of those long golf courses, 301 yards averaged off the tee as they were arriving at the PGA Championship that they won.
Mm.
So top 50 for rank, that's even more stringent than 301 in this modern day of golf. So what I've basically done it, what can we do to take the 156-man field down? Right, okay. So 156, well, first thing we can do, let's take away the 20 PGA champion, PGA of America professionals. So we're from 156 to 136. Sorry about that, but you know, that's just where we're at. If I then take away players that are currently, and I know that this number will change, because we've still got two tournaments being played this week. So there's some in the hinterland here. But if I take the rank of the driving distances of players as they sit right now heading to Quail Hollow, players that aren't long enough, I am basically taking away another 45 players. Now, I'm not going to list them all, but they do include Will Zalatoris, Sepp Straka, Adam Scott, Justin Rose, which is interesting considering what you said a minute ago, Paul. Colin Morikawa, Hideki Matsuyama, McIntyre, Lowry, Kirk, Hovland, Homer, Tommy Fleetwood, that'll break a few hearts, not that Tommy ever wins, Matthew Fitzpatrick, we've got Jason Day, Cam Davis. We've also got in there Daniel Berger, who I know a load of people. They're so hot on Berger at the moment because his stats are so great. So there's a lot of big name players there that simply aren't driving the ball long enough as we record this podcast to win a PGA Championship. If I then go away from that 301 yards number and I then look at the hinterland between top 50 in the driving distance rankings and where we get to, which is basically Bo Hosler. We've got a number of players here that don't rank well enough. So we're looking at Michael Kim, Harris English, Sahith Tigala, Tony Finau, Ricky Fowler, Patrick Cantlay, and this one. I can feel teeth grinding already. You could actually get rid of Scotty Scheffler on that basis. Because Scheffler at the moment ranks 78th for driving distance on the PGA Tour as we sit here right now. Last year, at this same point, because people go, well, he's been injured and whatever, he was ranked as 80th heading towards the PGA Championship for driving distance.
Again, consistent.
So it isn't. It's not an abnormality. It's the same as last year with Scotty Scheffler. So, Scheffler would fall out of the trend that you've highlighted. Xander's on the verge of falling out. That might change after the Truist. And Justin Rose falls out. Who else did you mention in that short list?
Of the short list, yeah. McIlroy, Rose, Reed, Scheffler, DeChambeau, Sungjae Im, Ludvig, Xander, Corey Connors, Jason Day.
Connors goes. The other thing I'll say about LIV, there's only one player that you would eradicate off of LIV based upon the 301 number, and that is Richard Bland. And I'm hearing or reading that is it 16 or 18 LIV players playing in the PGA next week?
Yeah, there's a few. I've job for tomorrow to work through all of their stats so they can actually appear on our predictor model next week, but yeah, there's a good chunk of LIV players.
Patrick Reed would qualify because I believe he's averaging at the moment on the LIV Golf Tour 305 off the tee.
Yep.
Is that all drives, Steve?
No, driving distance. I could go into all drives, but that's a whole other level of hurt.
No, I know, I know. I was just saying for context of the 301 yard thing. That's what I was trying to say. There's 89 guys averaging 301 or better on the PGA Tour this year.
I've got the all drive numbers because I'm anally retentive. The longest,
I do too.
Phil Mickelson was 59th for all drives when he won at Kiowa.
Okay.
If you look at all drives, that was apart really, from Phil,
that was really firm and fast though. So that kind of
You say that it was on Pass Barlam, wasn't it? It didn't get a lot of run on the fairways. But Xander last year was 34th, Koepka 14th, Thomas 11th. When I put we've got Mickelson 59th, Koepka 11th, Koepka 6th, Thomas 6th, Walker 20th, Day 3rd, McIlroy 2nd, McIlroy 4th, Keegan Bradley 28th.
There you go. So remove Phil from that and you have a very high average because he was an outlier win.
Yeah.
You know, he played absurd that week. So you can kind of just put that at the end of the bell curve. If you average out the rest of them, then you're into the teens.
What you're kind of saying there, I suppose, is top 40 all drives after the Truist and Myrtle Beach Classic. And this, of course, doesn't include Liv, because you can't get an all-drive stat on Liv. We haven't seen anyone apart from Phil Mickelson win this on a long golf course since 2010 with an all-drives number that was lower than 34th heading into the tournament, and that was Xander last year.
And not everybody in that top 40 of all drives is going to be in the field next week.
No.
No. Driving distance is such a prerequisite to win a PGA Championship. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I don't think it'd be too difficult in a different in a few weeks' time when we talk US Open winner either.
Actually, it's funny thing. The week before the PGA is coming out, the US Open is just bombarding social media with all the course setup. Like, it's it really just kind of, everybody's getting so focused on the US Open versus the PGA Championship. I don't know if the timing of the, it's kind of funny. Just kind of
trying to steal their thunder.
I mean, and it doesn't take much effort to. The PGA just kind of loses its shine. Just a few weeks after the Masters, we've barely even kind of digested Rory winning it, and we're already into a major. But then the next major, which is a bigger event, is already, you know, saying, hello, we're here, look at all our course setup stuff. And so the PGA just gets washed over.
I get that.
It's lost. It should be back in August or September or something like that.
You know, I was just going to say exactly the same thing. I think I preferred it in August. And Glory's last shot, as it was, and you could build a bit of a case for that being a really strong tournament then. Particularly as it was, you know, straight after the WGC into a major, and that kind of finish off your summer. And he's kind of getting a little bit lost. But having said that, it's an incredible field next week, and we've got players of the ilk of Rory, of the, you know, Scheffler from what he did at the Byron Nelson, and Bryson, who's tearing up Liv, playing at some of the very best golf at the moment. So you talked about separation right at the start. If you could imagine those three slugging it out on Sunday afternoon, that would be some spectacle, I think.
That'd be fantastic. But I mean, I think this year it looks like they're going to be the PGA Championship will be the beneficiary of nice biorhythms for these three guys, the three biggest names in golf right now, arguably. So, and hopefully they all perform. But yeah, I don't know. I've seen a little bit of chit chat on Twitter about it. Just put it back to August. Anyway, look, we can argue about it till the cows come home. It's not going to change unless somebody in power decides to change it. So it is what it is. And
yeah, I'm not sure we're arguing, Barry. I think we're violently agreeing with each other.
Well, sorry. Yeah, I know. Violently agreeing.
Can I just say, whilst you two are violently agreeing, if you are listening to this on YouTube, can you press the like button, please, for this episode? Because if we could hit 150 likes, that'd be absolutely fantastic for this research podcast. On top of that, of course, if you're new to the Golf Betting System podcast, if you could subscribe to the channel, make sure your notifications are switched on, you will then receive our tips podcast when it drops next Tuesday. I tell you what I was going to quickly take you guys through, because I want to make sure, Barry, that we've got enough time on this podcast for your selections, because I know that you're not going to be around for our tips podcast next week. So I'm just going to highlight to you. I've kind of put, and I shouldn't really say this, but I've put on my spreadsheet a title header, Curse of the Green Jacket? Let me explain. I'm going back to 2010, Phil Mickelson. When Phil won the Masters in 2010, he then didn't win another major for his next 14 attempts. So the next major he won was the 2013 Open. Charles Schwartzel in 2011 has never won another major. Bubba Watson in 2012. When he won in 2012, he didn't win another major for his next 7 attempts, and he won the 2014 Masters. 2013, Adam Scott never won another major. Danny Willett, 2016, We've jumped Watson in 2014. He clearly never goes on to win another major. Danny Willett in 2016. He hasn't won a major in his next 28 attempts. Sergio Garcia, his next 26 attempts, no major win. Reed in 2018, no major win in 25 attempts since. Woods, Dustin Johnson, no major win in 19 attempts since he won the green jacket. You see what I'm saying here? Hideki Matsuyama, 15 attempts he's had in majors after winning in 2021, hasn't won a major. John Rahm, no win in 7 since winning in 2023. Scotty Scheffler. Now, Scheffler won in 2022. He then has won another major. He won the 2024 Masters, and he won that. That was 7 majors after he won in 2022. So, Bubba Watson won in 2012 and the 2014 Masters. Scheffler won the 2022 and the 24 Masters. The only player, and I'm just taking you through this because of Rory McIlroy, the only player that has won a major very, very quickly after putting the green jacket on his shoulders was Jordan Spieth in 2015. He was 21 years of age. He was playing his 9th and his 10th majors of his career, and he won the Masters in 2015, and then he won the US Open, the next major, in June to win back-to-back majors post-Masters. Just to put that into context, Paul, as Paul's mentioned and we've mentioned, the PGA Championship back then was played in August. And in between winning the Masters, Spieth finished 2nd at Colonial and 3rd at Jack's Nicklaus's tournament, the Memorial Tournament, at Muirfield Village, the event prior to winning the US Open. What I'm suggesting here is that if Rory McIlroy was to go back-to-back on what I know is his most profitable and winning golf course that he's ever played on the PGA Tour, because he's won here 4 times, it would be an exceptionally rare performance to do what he would have achieved of winning the Masters and then winning the next major.
See,
I think
Rory,
that where that's taking me is that you would want to see Rory very, very close to the top of the leaderboard come Sunday at the Truist.
Yeah, like Rory front-loaded his drought by going about 40 majors without winning anything, so maybe there's an offset. It'll be incredible if he's up there, but not surprising either.
If there's one player that could do it, it has to be someone of a elite legendary status.
Yeah.
And I think McIlroy clearly goes into that. But what that stat does show you and that trend, do not underestimate the mental impact of winning a green jacket and what it has had traditionally across some of the best players in the world going back to 2010. Mm. It's difficult to get back up for the second major.
Do you think it hits them in the way that Paul Laurie's spoken about it before in the aftermath of winning, going into other tournaments and maybe not playing well or hitting poor shots, and he'd get down on himself saying, oh, that's not the shot of a major champion. Do you think there's some sort of psychology there where they might hit a bad shot or they have a bad round and they go, that's not the performance of a Masters champion, and they can kind of get down on themselves a little bit?
Potentially.
There has to be some explanation for it, because that's a pretty severe set of stats you've just rolled out there, Steve.
It's pretty crazy, really. You just think about it. Every Masters winner, going back to Phil Mickelson in 2010, of those major winners, only Phil himself, Bubba Watson and Scotty Scheffler have gone on to win more majors, plus Jordan Spieth, who actually won the next major. It's crazy, really.
Yeah, well, is you know, mentally, is it? Have you reached the pinnacle at that point? Is that where do you have to go back and reset your personal goals, or is there another goal for you to try and reset to? I mean, with Rory, if he were to win this week or next week coming up, then I think he's got a live chance of winning the season Grand Slam. He's,
yeah,
you know, and having won the Masters, having completed his own personal Grand Slam, then the only logical next goal for him to set himself would be, well, let's go and win all four.
Yeah,
let's do that.
With a side quest of winning just as many majors as possible now that he's kind of freed up. But yeah, maybe that's it. Like, you know, winning the green jacket is just that childhood dream that every golfer has because you just watched it growing up. And how do you recalibrate a lifetime of your dreams and expectations in the space of a few weeks before the next major or at the space of the next couple of years? Mm. You're rewiring your entire brain.
Yeah.
We could also debate, but I'm not going to go down this rabbit hole, whether Jordan Spieth should have won the 2005 US Open. Because I was on Dustin, 2015 US Open, because I was actually on Dustin Johnson, who missed from, he three-putted from about 6 feet, didn't he?
Cauliflower greens.
Cauliflower greens, yeah.
It gets shorter every time you mention it, Steve.
It does get shorter, yeah. It's like the old fishing tale. I caught a 40-pounder when actually it was about 4 pounds.
Three-putted from 4 inches.
Just to take you through Jordan Spieth's performance in 2015 at the majors, he won the Masters, he then won the US Open, he then went on to finish fourth at the Open and second at the PGA Championship. That was the PGA that Jason Day won at Whistling Straits.
What a season.
What a season. But I agree with Paul. Two things. If Rory McIlroy is to go back-to-back in winning the Masters and the PGA at Quail Hollow, it is an unbelievable achievement. And if he can do that, surely the 2025 spread could well be on there because Oakmont's going to suit him down to the ground as well. And we know that actually, if you said to us, you know, what has Rory's best major been recently, you have to say it's been the US Open. Comes second there a number of times at a US Open venue where you just hit it as far as you can. And, you know, you're lumping it out of the rough like everyone else, but they're about 40 or 50 yards behind you, the shorter hitters. Right, Barry, we're going to come to you now, mate, to close the show. You unfortunately can't be on our tips podcast next week.
No.
So take the listeners through your PGA Championship betting lineup.
So, yeah, I'm going to be in Austria for work, and I'm not sure about what sort of access I have to putting bets on. I'll be back Wednesday night, so I can still kind of catch bets before the off on Thursday. However, just in case, I've put a few on the exchange for the time being. Following some very sage advice from yourselves and statistical points, I've joined you on getting a bit of Bryson on the exchange. The power he has, the way he's playing recently, Masters result, and the win there last week in Live, and he's a very good putter. All those things line up quite well for him. Added to the fact that he's, for a little bit of price bonus, he's more than twice the price of Rory and Scotty. So I have Bryson as one of them. I've then taken, got Oberg. So just for Bryson I started out getting about 15.5 and I've just added a little bit here and there. So I think blended, I have around 14.5 on the exchange on him. Oberg is 23.5 I have, on the exchange. He's long enough.
That's
the thing. He's long enough. And it was just one thing you said earlier, like that modern player, and he is that modern player.
He does scream Quail Hollow.
Yeah. For just a lot of things, just feel, as you know, the aesthetics on it feel right. Just hits it a long way. Good ball striker. You know, just a pretty all round complete player. Without maybe being fully complete to be able to handle the most intense of examinations, which I don't think Quail is. It's a very strong examination of your game. So I don't think you need to have every part of your game in like the mid-30-year-old experience level to be able to win this. And that's kind of held true that quite a lot of players in their 20s can win the PGA. So his only black mark against him is that he is not American. And the, you know, vast majority of the winners of that are American. So, but, you know.
Just to mention, Barry, Bryson has played Quail Hollow 4 times. He's missed the cut. That missed cut, I believe, was the missed cut was before the PGA Championship. So he finished missed cut in 2016, 33rd at the PGA Championship in 2017. He's then finished 4th and 9th on his last 2 visits here. Ludvig Åberg has never played Quail Hollow. I'm just looking at the course stats that Paul has pulled together.
Well, neither is the number one player in the world, so I wouldn't hold it against Åberg.
No, no, no. I don't think that's a negative against either, to be honest, Scotty or Ludvig. I don't think it's the most intense course to learn.
No, no, it's. I don't think so either. So anyway, the bet's on, so I can't do much about it. So onwards we move.
I'm strongly agreeing with you, Barry, again.
I've kept sprinkling. So I don't know. I think Victor has something about him, even though the driving distance is... I don't understand why Victor's driving distance isn't, you know, comfortably over 300. It seems like he's got this, the power and the swing speed. So, but you know, he's won recently, and yeah, let's see. I mean, your short game doesn't need to be elite around Quail Hollow. You know, just chunk it out like he can. So, anyway, he was in the 40s. So I said, we'll take a bit of Victor. He's a fun bet to kind of have on board. Anyway, just fun to watch. So, yeah. Enjoyment investment money, I'll call it. Just little kind of hundreds and thousands sprinkles, not in terms of money, just the little bits and pieces, a little bit on Spieth, and then a couple of long ones there on Minwoo Lee, purely because of his power, and Patrick Reed, because he's got that Ryder Cup kind of thing in his mind. So honestly, a very irresponsible betting card, but you know, I just want to have a few runners in the race, and with the value, with the price on the exchange, and not doing each way bets, I feel like I'd just add a couple more to the stable for the week.
No, I'm not sure it's excessive there, Barry. It was 6 or 7 players. It's kind of where many a punt will end up, I think.
I need to stop because I could end up with 12 or 13. But, you know, it's good that, you know, they're all keeping in mind, let's see, Hideki and Victor are the only ones that would be under that driving distance threshold.
Yeah, they're not massively below it, but yes.
Sorry, I didn't mention Hideki, did I? No, I did. Can't remember. He's another one. Full list is DeChambeau, Åberg, Hovland, Spieth, Matsuyama, Minwoo, and Reed.
Just on Hovland... Last year, he was negative for strokes gained putting, 115th on the PGA Tour across the whole season. So far this year, and it was something we definitely saw when he won around a Carolina-type golf course. I know it's played at Tampa Bay, Florida, but it's a Carolina kind of golf course. When he won the Valspar, he putted very, very nicely. And he's actually in the top 44 so far this year for putting on the PGA Tour. So one thing you can't call Victor Hovland this season Team No Putt, because he can actually get the ball in the cup. That's a big positive for me at Quail Hollow. I believe they were Poa Trivialist greens as well at Valspar. So very similar to the surface he'll be on this at Quail Hollow. Interesting betting card. There's a lot of names there that I can certainly agree with. Certainly agree.
And 2 or 3 of them will immediately disappoint me, but you know, that's life when you're putting punts on.
It's the nature of the game, Barry.
Yeah, and look, if Rory goes on and wins and blows all those bets out of the water, I'll be thrilled. Go, like, happy days. Let's go.
Anything to add, Paul, before we say goodbye to the listeners?
No. Oh well, look, there's a tiny bit of work that I've been doing. Just I haven't quite completed it before we started recording, but it backs up a couple of Barry's selections. And going back to your preview, you've listed a number of venues that have Champion Bermuda grass as their base, with Poa overseed, some not. So I've been looking at strokes gain performances on those courses since strokes gained were captured. And so it's not
tell
quite...
me we're not going to supply this to the listeners for free.
Well, it's not,
I mean,
quite
this is sheer madness.
It's not quite complete, but I think we can use it for our own volition, chaps.
Absolutely.
Anyway, as it stands, a minimum of 10 rounds played on those courses combined. My top five right now of players in terms of their strokes gained putting performance on Champ and Bermuda based greens. In reverse order, fifth, Denny McCarthy. Oh, Denny's a great putter anyway, so that makes a level of sense. Fourth, Patrick Reed. So I know you mentioned him there, Barry. So I think Reed's got a live chance, actually. Just generally, because it was his second year when they played back in 2017, from memory. Yeah. And he was great at the Masters as well.
He's got a very good record around Quail Hollow. Yeah, and he seems to have beefed up. He seems to be hitting the ball a long way on live this year. And, of course, he's only got four majors where he can impress Keegan Bradley.
Mm.
Okay, Patrick Reed.
Third... your old mate, Brendan Todd, who's still on your post-it note, I think. So I'm sure that I'm sure you wouldn't be backing him anyway, and I'm not sure Brendan's got the mumbo.
Is he playing?
Well, it's listed on my stats, but yeah, it may not even be there. As I say, this is a preliminary piece of analysis.
You can grey him out next week when he's not in the field.
Steve's not backing him regardless anyway, so I think it's immaterial. Second, Taylor Montgomery. Horribly out of form, but we know he can putt. And clearly he can putt on Champion Bermuda grass base greens. And then top of my analysis, as it stands at the moment, one, Bryson DeChambeau. Who has seemingly got a fantastic record from a strokes game putting perspective on Champion Bermuda based greens.
How deep do you think this analysis will go then? Will this cover most of the field, Paul?
If all goes
according to plan.
I've just got to work through a few more bits, but this was kind of the first cut of it as I pulled it out. So I'm gonna
trap you here now. So anybody who submits a 5-star review before the pod next week, Paul will send this data to you. How about that?
Oh dear! I can't decipher it, let alone the readers and listeners.
That's not your problem. He'll give you the raw data; they can figure it out.
I did smile when Bryson came out top because I know we've collectively been quite keen on his chances for next week, it's good to see things are kind of pointing in that direction.
That's madness. That is. Mm. Well, we look forward to that full piece of work, Paul. That's going to be absolutely amazing.
Mm. We'll see.
As Barry said, please send us a 5-star review because we have literally none for next Tuesday's PGA Championship Tips show. So please dig deep and send us a few 5-star reviews. Barry, I hope your selections for next week go really well. I can't clearly offer you best luck next Tuesday, so I hope your selections... a few of them definitely get in the mix.
I think secretly I want Oberg to win because he's leg two of my four of my accumulator for the year.
Interesting. Listeners, I hope your research goes well. And as we said, we will be back on Tuesday of next week with our pod selection show. So listen out for that. That will be available. My preview is out Monday the 12th. Our podcast is out Tuesday the 13th of May. See you later then, guys. Thanks for your time.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved. With all the stats and the tips and so much more. Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf.